This morning we have two Bible readings actually, and I'm going to speak about both of them, but I'll just read them one at a time so that you'll understand a bit more of the actual reading. As Anglicans, we follow what's called the Revised Common Lectionary, and you'll find most of the other churches follow along, so if you were to go to any church, you'd probably hear most of the same readings. So that's nice to know that we're united with the other people. This is a reading from the Old Testament. If you're looking for it in your book, page 236. A reading from the book of Judges, chapter 4, verses 1 to 10. After Ehud died, the Israelites once again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, a king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Haroseth Abiam, because he had 900 iron chariots and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years. They cried to the Lord for help. Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was leading Israel at that time. She held court under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the Israelites came to her to have their disputes decided. She sent for Barak, son of Abinoam from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun and lead the way to Mount Tabor. I will lure Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands." Barak said to her, "If you go with me, I will go. But if you don't go with me, I won't go." "Very well," Deborah said, "I will go with you. But because of the way you are going about this, the honour will not be yours, for the Lord will hand Sisera over to a woman." So Deborah went with Barak to Kadesh, where he summoned Zebulun and Naphtali. 10,000 men followed him, and Deborah also went with him. Hear the word of the Lord. Amen. Now, it's a bit interesting because we've been following along the Old Testament. We followed Moses and we followed the people in the wilderness. And then when Moses died, who took over? Joshua. Thought I wasn't going to hear anything. And then just a little whisper, Joshua took over. And when Joshua died, what happened? They all fell apart. It came then to the part of the Bible from the book of Judges, the story there. Deborah was a judge. Now, does that surprise you at all, that here was a lady leading the Israelites? Deborah was the fourth of the judges. I don't know the names of all the others. They're there in the book if you want to go and read their story. But Deborah came along the fourth. And the Israelites had gone back to their usual pattern. When there was a good leader following God, the Israelites followed. When the leader died, they stopped following God. They did all sorts of wrong things, and God handed them over to their neighbours. That means there was a war and their neighbours overran them. After a while, they started to cry out to God. God listened. This is the end of the story here, when God is intervening and telling them what to do, that he's telling them through a woman how to go about winning this victory. It's rather interesting that while ever there was a good leader at the front, they were doing the right thing. When the leader stopped, they went their own way. Isn't that a bit like society today? Are we lacking good leaders? We really are, aren't we? We don't have too many states at the moment, and we're going in all sorts of directions. But here is God talking to Deborah, telling her how to win this victory. What do you know about Deborah? Nothing. What was Deborah?
A judge.
Otherwise.
Oh, I'm going the wrong way, sorry. There's a little bit. That's just a coin from 1553 that showed Deborah. She was a prophet. She was the fourth judge of Israel. There were other prophets before, obviously, and Gideon came afterwards. Have you heard of Gideon?
Yes.
Some of them we've heard of. Not too many. Okay, where did Deborah live?
Israel.
With the Israelites, what part? Well, it was not a bad guess all the same. It says she lived or she held court under the palm of Deborah. So she sat outside, no pretentious palace. She sat down under the palm and judged between their grievances and things. But she was listening to God. Here's another tricky question. I'm full of tricky questions. What other women in the Bible are shown as listening to God and doing God's things? Being particularly prophets. Yeah, no, not Ruth. Sorry, everybody instantly jumps to Ruth. Not Ruth, another prophet, woman prophet.
Anna.
Let's see. Miriam. Do you know who Miriam was at the very beginning? Who was Miriam?
Moses'
sister. Who else's sister? Aaron's sister. Then Miriam the prophet, Aaron's sister, took a timbrel in her hand, and then it talks about her dancing and singing about some of the things. But it mentions quite clearly she was a prophet. Who knows about Huldah the prophet? Well, I thought you might tell me because I didn't know too much about her either. But it says there she was a prophet and the wife of whoever. Somebody mentioned Anna. What did Anna do? Where was Anna? How was she a prophet?
She was waiting for the birth of Christ.
There was also an old man there too waiting, Simeon, Anna and Simeon in the temple, waiting for the birth of Christ. When she saw the tiny baby, they knew that the Saviour had come. And the last one, another tricky one, but you've got to look hard to find women prophets in the Bible, were Philip's four daughters. Who was Philip? Who was he that he should have four wonderful prophesying daughters? One of the first deacons. He was also an evangelist. And Paul stayed with him on his way back to Jerusalem. And then he had four daughters. And they were prophesying. I'll just leave it on that screen at the moment. I won't go any further. Because coming back to our story, God has told Deborah to tell Barak how to go about winning the war that would release the people. But when she tells him, what does he say? This is the commander of the armies. He says, I'll go. You go with me. Come and hold my hand. The commander of the armies. He's not going to go by himself. To go by himself.
No faith.
Was an Israelite?
God's with him.
If God's with him, he would have faith, yes. Do you think he might have been a little bit scared? It tells us a bit about this other fellow, Sisera, with his 900 iron chariots, and he cruelly oppressed them. Perhaps he wasn't frightened, but Deborah says that's okay. I will come with you, but God's given me a bit more of a message, and the next part of the message is, because you need somebody to go with you, you won't have all the honour of this. The honour of this victory will go to all of you, but not Deborah. So Deborah goes off, goes with him, they collect the men, they go and fight the battle, and every one of the opposition were killed, except for Sisera, the leader, and he escaped. How does that sound? No, he didn't escape for long because he ran into the tent of another lady. And it's a grisly finish to the story, but the other lady actually kills him in jail. She kills him. So the two women are actually responsible for the victory that's there. But have a look at this passage from Hebrews. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak. There's the mention of Deborah and Jael, the ones who did the work. Yeah. Who do you think wrote the letter to the Hebrews? Hebrews. A man.
We don't know.
No, we don't actually know who wrote it. For a long time it was attributed to Paul. But obviously it was a man. And Barak gets all of the honour. Of Judges rolls on and on in the same sort of way. After Deborah dies, the same thing happens and they go on. They just don't listen after the leader has gone. But notice what Deborah did. She didn't say to Barak, "Oh, you wimpy little man, I'm going to sack you," or anything like that. She said, "I'll go with you." And that there's a really important message for us there, because a lot of pastoral care is about going with people, being with them. It's called ministry of presence. You often don't have to do anything but be there with somebody to give them the courage to do what they need to do. Often in my ministry, I'll be there with somebody who's dying. They just want somebody there. The family wants somebody. You don't have to do it. You have to be there and be God's presence. So there's a real message there about what you can do and how you can empower other people. Empower them by being there and being with them. Just something to think about. Our gospel reading for today was from Matthew 25, and if you're looking for that, it's on page 983. This is another interesting story, and this has got a real sting in the tail, this one. So I'm reading from the Gospel of Matthew. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money. To another, 2 talents, and to another, 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also with the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of the servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought another 5. The master, he said, "You entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with the 2 talents came also. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I've gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you haven't sown and gathering where you haven't scattered seed. So I was afraid and I went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and I gather where I haven't scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him, and throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is the gospel of the Lord. Now, I don't know whether you think the weeping and the gnashing of teeth fits well with the gospel. I always end up scoring the passages that end like that, and I'm not real thrilled about that, because I don't want to see the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. But you would have heard this story quite a few times, wouldn't you? You would have heard about looking after the talents that you've been given. So we need to have a bit of a think about it and see what's really behind it. Now, a talent was roughly about 20 years' salary if you were going to work. So it's an awful lot of money. It's another example of Jesus going over the top with his storytelling so that people would listen. Imagine if I gave you 100 years of salary. It's hard to believe, isn't it? But Jesus does that so that the people really get the story. He exaggerates quite a bit. And we used to say, well, it's all about looking after the talents that you've got and not burying them in the ground, using them. But modern scholarship is saying, no, you need to look a bit more closely. Look at where it is in the Bible. It follows on from the parable of the 10 virgins, which we had last week. But prior to that, Jesus is having a go at the Pharisees and the Sadducees, which he very often did. He's saying to them, the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes, you are not looking after your talents. He's not talking to the ordinary people like us. He's talking to the leaders and the rulers of the day. They were given Moses' law, and they took the law, 10 commandments, and made 613 rules and regulations out of it. They didn't use them for good. They used them to weigh people down. They were given the temple. The temple was a great blessing. The temple was their domain, but they made it really difficult for people. You had to follow their rules about it. Now the king is back. They're saying, we don't want to know about you because we have made ourselves a very comfortable living here. We run the show. People do things our way, and we don't want to know about you. So you can see why Jesus would be saying something to them. Jesus here is valuing the smaller people, the little people like you and I, who are going about reminding people about God and God's ways, the people who were accepting Jesus when he came, people who'd been looking for him and knew that he was the Messiah when he came. It does have a nasty sting in the tail, so think about it. Think about you. Do you have 5 talents? We can use the word in both senses. Now, do you have all that money? You can do something with it. If you don't have all that money, do you have other talents? Is your talent encouraging other people? Are you like Deborah, who went with Barak and encouraged him so that they could have that great victory? Think about where your talents are. Think about encouraging each other on our journey, and forget about the scribes and the Pharisees. Think about God. Forget all the rules and regulations and just be listening. See who you can encourage on the journey, because we all need encouragement when we have on our way.